Time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. We've gathered the entire 97.3 The Fan crew together to bring you the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Here's your host, Ben Higgins.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the penultimate regular season edition of our Padres Roundtable on 97.3 The Fan, presented commercial-free by Roundtable Pizza. It is pizza royalty. That's not an incorporator word. That is means second-to-last roundtable of the season. I'm joined today by most of the crew, other than Chris Ella, who's on vacation. To my left today is Craig Elston. Hello, Craig.
I've always thought you were the penultimate host here in San Diego.
Thank you. Woodsy, right in the middle today. How do you feel in the middle of all the action?
I am Mr. Penultimate, to be honest with you.
And then a little flip on the left side here. We've got Annie Heilbrun.
Hello, Ben. That's because we're able to flip. I mean, we're flexible.
Very,
you know?
Flexible. And sitting opposite me on the other end is Tony Gwynn Jr. Hello, Tony.
Hello, Ben. How are
it's
you?
Good to see everybody. All right, Annie, I heard you did a great job last week. Thank you for filling in while I was on vacation.
Appreciate it. Not as good as you do, but
I was out of town, and I didn't get to hear it. And now Woods has me all spun out that I'm going to ask all the same questions that you did last week. So
I did take as many of those as I could.
I'm going to start with one that you couldn't possibly have asked, and that is, just taking the current temperature of the Padres, who went 5-1 since the last roundtable, road sweep of the Giants, taking 2-3, nearly a sweep of the Houston Astros. Padres own the best record in baseball since the All-Star break. They've had several good runs since July. So, in your opinion, and why don't we start with Annie, since she hosted last week, are the Padres playing their best baseball of the season right now?
I believe they are, and I believe that they have found even yet another gear that they're working toward now that they can see the light at the end of the tunnel with the playoffs. I think you're seeing, especially kind of like the superstar players, but even everyone in the clubhouse, kind of just taking it up another level, getting themselves ready for what the playoff experience is going to be like. So I do. I think that they're very focused and locked in right now.
Yeah, Padres had, Tony, some really good runs, especially post All-Star break when you guys were on the East Coast and long winning streaks. But I don't know. It feels like right now they're as complete of a team as we've seen.
Yeah, I mean, this is we've kind of seen this coming since the second half began. And there was that extremely hot, you know, month of baseball they had, and then played about 500 ball. But, you know, one of the signs of a really good team is you can have your fall off is about 500, and then you can get back on it. And that's what we've seen from this team. It's a combination of everybody starting to get healthy at the right time. I mean, obviously getting you and Joe back has been a huge uplifting piece of it, and getting Toddy back. And so they're healthy, and they are peaking right at the correct time, in my opinion.
And, Craig, that consistency has been a big part. Padres still no more than two losses in a row since the All-Star break, and that's continued on all the way here through September.
And that early East Coast great road streak that got us to the point where we could make the trades that happened, that was happening negotiating Adam Mazur starts and Randy Vasquez starts. And those guys have been replaced by Joe Musgrove and Yu Darvish. There's no bigger upgrade in baseball than what's happened in those two rotation slots. Just like there's no bigger post-deadline acquisition than getting Fernando Tatis Jr. back, OPSing around 1,000.
And Woods, I think you'd agree, Padres are passing the eye test. Whatever that is, the Padres seem to be passing it right now.
Well, and they're definitely passing the, you know, we talked this morning about busting narratives, you know, and there's been some narratives busted, and they went into San Francisco, get that sweep, and you're like, all right, well, it's the Giants, though. I mean, they're scuffling right now. Their offense is non-existent. You sweep the Giants, you handle your business. The Astros are going to be a much tougher test. Well, they won two out of three, and let's be honest, probably should have won all three. I mean, they're busting narratives every single day. Is there room for improvement on some things? Absolutely, but there's no baseball team out there that can improve on a couple of things.
Now, Mike Schilt has been big on, you know, one game, one opponent at a time all the way through, and I think the Padres have mostly bought in. But we did see some talk from Manny Machado, of all people, after the game yesterday of, you know, what is next to come, a postseason run that he says, I think we're going to see this team again. And there's only one way you could see the Astros again, and that would be in the World Series at the end of the year.
Or in Cancun if you're golfing, if
I guess
either
so,
team makes it. I mean, that's the other way you
so
can do it.
So, Tony, as a player, are you okay with that kind of talk from Manny? Like, hey,
yeah,
we expect to see this team again, and that's going to be in a month.
Yeah, and he did it in a way that wasn't like, you mean, you had to kind of think about it for a sec, but Yeah, no, I'm if that's how Manny feels, I'm sure that's how a bunch of guys in that locker room feel, and I'm all for it. Those guys in that locker room, they don't care nothing about, you know, myths or you know, narratives. They feel like they've built this team up and they have progressed in a way that they're confident no matter who they're playing. You saw what just transpired against the Astros. That's a good team over there. No matter how down they may be this year, that's a really good team. And that's really been how the Padres have performed against those type of teams all year.
Now, I think you never want to see confidence cross the line into cockiness, overconfidence, Craig. But I haven't really gotten that sense, even from Manny's comments. It wasn't like, yeah, try to stop us. It was just more like, hey, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing, and that should lead us to a good place.
Plus, I would add the context of it's an AC Machado interaction, and they have this kind of playful back and forth, right. And AC went back to him another time to kind of, okay, let me lock this in for the column type situation. I thought he was really trying to show a lot of respect to Houston, mm-hmm. is what he was, maybe his intent, as opposed to saying we're about to go win three playoff series in the National League playoffs, but I do believe that this is the Padres' final form and that this final form is capable of beating any team in baseball. Doesn't mean you're gonna in a two-game out of three series, but they've got the team to beat anybody.
Woods, you tend to be the most cautious when it comes to tempting fate of the group, certainly spending some time with you. Are you okay with Manny's comments?
Yeah. I mean, he also told us at the beginning of the year, don't worry about where I'll be at the end of the year. Don't worry about it. I will be exactly where I need to be, and look at that. Look at that. One short of 30 and 100-plus RBI, and I wouldn't have thought it. As much as I love him, I would have said, man, you're just going to run out of time. I think you can be better, but you're going to run out of time. He didn't run out of time. So it's kind of like when he says it, I tend to believe it.
And Annie, ultimately, you'd rather have a confident team than one that's lacking confidence at this point in the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is a team that feels like they've earned it. They have, you know, like they've earned what the place that they're in and the place that they're holding. They've kind of controlled their destiny for this part out of the All-Star break. And so for them, I think that they're feeling like, hey, we're very locked in. We've put in the work. And this is a really special team that we have. I thought it was great. Look, Manny called his shot. The Astros clubhouse was saying that it would be a great matchup, too. So I think it was two teams that respect each other and that were pretty, you know, played some intense games and felt like they played them pretty well.
Dubon said, he goes, well, I mean, at least we go seven in the World Series. It'd be, you know, it'd be fun to play these guys in a seven-game series.
Right, so. That's because the Astros thinking the same
they
thing
believe
over
it.
There.
Yep.
That's why they are who they are.
Yep.
And I thought maybe more significant than even Manny's comments in that same piece is the comments from Joe Espada, a manager. Well, as a bench coach, he's been there a couple of times for World Series titles and just, you know, observing the San Diego Padres and seeing what he thinks is a team that can make a deep run into the playoffs, Craig.
I look at the opponents and I see a stronger weakness on every single opponent in the National League field than San Diego right now. And I don't think that's braggadocious. I just really look at the team because the biggest difference to me, I mean, you can argue offense. I think this year's offense is better than 2022. Obviously, it doesn't have Juan Soto in it. But that year, the Padres had to turn to Mike Clevinger and Sean Manaea in a National League Championship Series game. This year in that situation, that would be Michael King. I mean, that's just a gigantic difference in terms of looking at. And you know what? I'll even take it a step further. I remember that year, the Astros winning the World Series and looking at them and going, Christian Javier is their fourth starter. This is ridiculous. Like, they get to a game four, a must-win situation, and they've got a starter out there that's so much better than the opponent, and that's where that series turned. And I think the Padres right now have that ability within a playoff series, a longer series, to turn it based on the strength of their rotation.
Tony, and this feels like a case of you have to earn your respect in Major League Baseball. Now, you have to respect every opponent, and we hear Mike Shildt talking about that. Even the White Sox coming in, you have to respect them. But as a player, there's a different level of not disrespecting an opponent, but actually like looking at another team and going, oh, that is a good team. And yeah, it feels like the Padres have reached that level with the teams they're actually playing where they look at the Padres and go, that's a good team.
Yeah, no, Joe Espada is not the only manager that's felt that way this year. And some of them felt like that early in the season before we've seen this final product. So it's always been there. It's just a matter of seeing it more consistently. And when you start to do it consistently, it's easier to start to see from the outside when you're constantly winning ball games. And these guys, you know, some of these teams may not be catching the Padres on an everyday basis, but they catch them in the highlights, they catch them on the phone, and I think that starts to kind of resonate with people. And then when you see it in person, and you see the execution that this team puts together on a nightly basis, you can't do anything but respect it at that point.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It is pizza royalty. And I want to talk a little bit about Fernando Tatis Jr. for a second. I made an online comment during the game last night, and I was surprised how many Padres fans came out of the woodwork with criticism of Fernando Tatis Jr.
I'm surprised that you're surprised.
Well, I still get the sense that he is the most popular player on the San Diego Padres, and that Manny Machado is the one that gets more criticism usually from even Padres fans. But there were a lot out there, and I was trying to go, okay, you know, yeah, he struck out three times, but he's always got the ability to do what he did later in the game, that is hit a home run and change a game with his play. My question for you all, and let's start with Woods in the middle this time. He is... He's on a 9-game hitting streak, 5 home runs. Of course, he missed 2022. He had an up-and-down 2023. He missed a couple of months this year with a stress reaction. Do you feel that Fernando Tatis Jr. is finally and truly back at this point to the player that we kind of remembered from long ago?
Yeah, 100%. 100% back. And I think, you know, you miss that much time, it's still going to take you a little bit of time to get caught up and feel comfortable and not maybe jumpy in the box. He's a little jumpy. Like, I totally get it. You got a runner out there. You want to do something big. The crowd's going nuts. So you've seen a lot of the other guys on the team, because they've had 300 at-bats or 400 at-bats, they may be a little bit more calm up there. They're not trying to do so much. Fernando is still, he's a little bit late to the party, but look what he's done, even being a little bit late to the party and missing so much time. So the way he changes the game in the field, the way he changes the game with his arm, his athleticism, and of course his bat, yeah, man, like, he's playing great, and he can still get better, and I think that he will. I mean, it's the more ABs, the more repetitions he gets, the better he's going to play.
Annie, you remember pre-surgery, pre-suspension Tatis. I mean, how different, how same is this player? Compare the two from then to now.
I think he's even more mature. I do, and I think he understands his role in the team even more, and I think he is someone who was bummed to miss the 2022 playoffs, was bummed to sit on the sidelines in the dugout while this team was killing it and he was injured, and now is loving the opportunity to help his team out. There's not one player on that roster that can't improve, right? That can't get better in some scenarios or whatnot, but I think you got to let Fernando be Fernando and let him find that confidence, which you do lose a little bit when you're injured, I think, and come out there. And he's been showing it. I mean, at the plate, like you said, in the field, in right field, putting pressure on the pitcher. I think you're seeing everything you want to see out of Fernando right now.
Craig, his strikeout rate's actually the lowest of his career this year. You really don't see lapses at all from Fernando Tatis Jr. Is it possible that this is the best version we've ever seen so far? Not saying that he can't get better. Like Annie said, I agree with her, but are we at that level where he is now kind of past where he was before? Because it took him a while to get back.
Well, he's still not 100% healthy.
Yeah. That's true.
So I'll say to the most, you know, basic response to your question, no, this isn't the best, because I think there's an even healthier version of Fernando Tatis Jr. that we could see next year. But I agree with everything the panel has been saying in terms of his maturity has improved. This is the biggest ceiling raiser on the team. He creates dynamic play for the team on the field, at the plate. He's not going to get a hit every time, but I'm reminded of almost LeBron to Tatis, and I want to be clear about this. As a young player, if LeBron went 2-for-12, it was like, how dare he?
Right.
You know, overrated.
Right.
Get him out of here. Oh, my God, he missed 8 threes? This guy's a joke. And it's because the expectation was that he would literally hit every shot in his career. And that's what I really get from fans on Tatis. If he doesn't get a hit every single time, they continue to bring up the mistakes of 2022. But I tell you what, he handled 23 the best he possibly could have handled it. And I think he has been an exemplar of what you want in 2024.
Tony, where do you see Fernando in his development as a baseball player, the maturity, then to now, where does he stand?
He's light years ahead of where he was from a maturity standpoint. I still think he hasn't hit the ceiling as who he can be as a ball player. He hasn't had consistent baseball over the last, you know, 3-4 years, whether it's due to injury or the suspension or not, right? He just hasn't been able to build any kind of, you know, continuity with himself. You know, he's dealing with a stress reaction. And, you know, that's in his leg. So, I mean, like, how dynamic is he when he's still dealing with that? So, I think
still pretty dynamic.
Exactly, and that's the point. Yeah. And you know, I caution the everybody. You know, Twitter can sometimes feel like the 14 people that are, hey, he's terrible, or we need to get rid of him, can feel like a million. It's just the 14 people that
I always wonder that
like
too.
That.
You know, because I understand social media can be very vocal, but at the same time, I always think that for everyone who's not saying it, there's probably 100 people who are also thinking it. So I don't know how accurate it is or not when you see that kind of criticism. Saw it from Manny, you know, early in the season. You have plenty of fans who go, he's washed. This contract is going to be a disaster. Well, Craig, that's turned out just to be absurdly false when it came to Manny Machado and what he's been able to do this year.
I mean, 100%. This is probably the single biggest busted narrative of the 2024 season. And I will tell you, not just some fans, a lot of fans and a lot of smart fans that were making this claim. And it was fighting a headwind to say, no, wait, Manny Machado has been hurt last year and this year. Maybe he's not actually just an irreversible decline.
I challenged the smart fans that were saying that this guy was, it is as certain as the clock turning 9 every day that this guy is going to be around 275, 30, and 85. Just look at his baseball card. It says it every year. And so, to me, it's, you know, we'll be here again next year. I promise you.
Oh, there's
we'll
no question.
We'll be again here. We'll be right here again next year.
If he doesn't
get off to a blazing start,
yes,
which he'll be right back here again.
Which he won't, because he never really does.
He doesn't, but it'll be the one year he does, and then it might calm it down. But I'm just saying, like, we'll be here again on Manny once again.
Yeah.
And at some point, Annie, I mean, you know, he will decline, just as every ball player does, but he's in his prime and should be for several more years.
He is. And two things. One, Manny will always challenge anyone who will look at a player and say, oh, he's past the 30, 31, 32-year-old mark. He's going to decline. Manny loves the player who has longevity and has learned to be a smart player and play the game the smart way and really build on their baseball IQ, which he does every year. He will fight that. I mean, and I think he'll do a good job fighting it. But two, also, talked to him the other day about his arm. I mean, his elbow is still not 100%. He's just like Fernando is. He's going to excel from having an offseason where he gets to train the way he wants to. He gets to rest the way he wants to. He gets to do everything he normally does in an offseason. He's going to probably come back next year even stronger. What he's been doing, dealing with this elbow still not being 100%, has been remarkable.
And, you know, while Ella was busy examining one of the seven wonders of the world right now, I presume, let me kind of take one of his roles on the show for just a second, and it's one you might be surprised at, but here's one of the places where I do feel analytics has failed baseball fans who are trying to be smart baseball fans. It's in the zips and steamer projections, because those projections are built based on every player in the universe, and they come up with a uniform model of at 30 you're here, but 31 you're 90% of that, and 32 you're 90% of that, and so on and so forth. So when Manny's contract came out, Zip Steamer put out a projection, and it showed Manny getting progressively a little bit worse every single year for 11 years. And the thing is, not all players are built the same. Manny Machado is more like an Adrian Beltre. I expect him at 37 to hit 35 home runs.
Well, and Woods, isn't the thing that drives some fans crazy about Manny his leaving some in reserve on a routine ground out? Doesn't that make him more likely to be a player that will manage himself better later in his career?
Yeah, it's you know, it drives me crazy. It drives me crazy. And I've spent 162 games fighting it because, as I've said many times, when you're in the presence of somebody that is so self-assured, it's intimidating. Like, when I've talked to Manny before, the belief that he has in himself, it's wild to be around it. Like, well, you can feel it from him. And when he says it, I believe him. And I watch him and I go, well, yeah. I mean, I don't teach my son serves, but he's six. I'm like, you run until you don't have knee surgery or elbow surgery, right? It's a different perspective. I trust that man to make the right decisions because he's earned all of that trust. He's earned it. Like, he knows when. You saw there was a play yesterday, and he knew exactly who was running. He was not even looking at first base, and he threw a seed, because yeah. He knew, I got to get rid of this thing quick. Bro, Arenado doesn't do that. Scott Rowland didn't do that. He knows. I got one split second, and he gets these guys by a split second every single time. It's like watching a magician, dude. It's crazy.
The internal clock is
bananas. I've never seen anything like it.
And then you have to deal with my quiet self-assurance every single day.
Yes, and my self-assurance, which is zero, you know. It's just like you're around somebody like that, and you go, how do I not take him at his word, you know, that he's going to be where he needs to be after he consistently proves it?
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented by Roundtable Pizza. Pizza royalty going for another 40 minutes or so. All right, so Mike Schilt finally pulled the switch, and I don't know if it was before last Thursday or not, with Jackson Merrill up to the fifth slot in the order. But the question here today is that the last change, or would you make any other adjustments to the Padres' starting lineup to maximize their potential effectiveness for the playoffs, Craig?
Yeah, the change happened Saturday up in San Francisco.
That's right, Saturday.
We didn't get to talk about it last week. We were talking about it the week before on the radio. It should be a good move to move Merrill up at least to fifth, and I do believe this is the last move. Yeah. And I think this is the optimized lineup. I really do. It was different when Profar was hitting 185 for a month, but the Profar that gets hits, I want him third because I like the switch hitter. I love the at-bat he takes. I love the way he battles the pitcher, and I think he is a perfect complement. Where you've got to rise the battler, you've got Tatis the free swinger, you've got Profar the battler, and then you've got Manny kind of the opportunist, you know, who'll either battle you or go for that first pitch. I love the mix. Merrill 5 is right. It's getting one of your best players more at-bats, and furthermore, it's getting them connected. Now Merrill's connected to Manny and to Tatis and to Profar. When they're on base, it's his job to knock them in. That's beautiful, and I love the way it's working.
Any changes that you'd make, and how do you feel like the change with Merrill has gone so far?
I like it. I like the lineup the way it is as well. I think it's gone well with Merrill. I think that they took a long time to make that move. They really let him grow into that spot that he had at the bottom of the lineup, and I think that when they finally did, it was a thoughtful move. Also, you know, credit to Jake Cronenworth and credit to the other guys who are moving as well in place of that, because now you have a bottom of the lineup that can be really dangerous too. I mean, there really aren't very many holes in this lineup at all.
Tony, what did you think about the lineup change, and is there anything else you'd do?
No, I wouldn't do anything different. I think the lineup, I don't think it's necessarily set in stone. Like, they get into a postseason matchup and, you know, they don't like the way they'll change it up if they have to, but this is a good lineup, and you know, whether Merrill was hitting fifth or sixth, we'll find out over time if this is producing more runs. Obviously, the numbers will eventually tell us that, but Jackson is so talented, you can put him really anywhere in the lineup, and you're gonna get the same result.
Woods, you're happy with the lineup as it stands?
Yeah, I mean, I was fine with it again because I was fine with it before. Because I think it was working, and I also, I would just think about what Tony Jr. said maybe a month ago, 6 weeks ago. He is Jackson Merrill right now because of where he's hitting. The seven hole is vastly different than the five, is vastly different than the three. And like Annie said, very thoughtful move, not a knee-jerk move that, right, you know, a lot of managers or young managers or adult league managers would make, right? Like, oh, he's just not swinging, I gotta move him. No, man, I think it was a thoughtful move, and I think Jackson, again, as a rookie, has proven he can adjust to almost anything you throw at him, and he's learning from some really good adjusters on that team right now, and I think those guys have helped ease his transition a little bit too.
I think if you had a supercomputer putting together a Padres lineup, it would probably tell you you need someone who walks a little more at the top of the order on base percentage. You might move Jurickson up. Ultimately, though, and this is not intended as a knock toward Xander Bogaerts, Jake Cronenworth, Kyle Higashioka, or Ha-Sung Kim, whoever is going to be at the bottom four. But there's five really good offensive players in the lineup. And right now, they're batting one through five. Whatever the order is, you're getting those guys up the most. And then the other guys who sometimes contribute, can contribute at the bottom of the order, they're at the bottom of the order for a reason. And that seems correct.
Have contributed. Have.
Absolutely.
All of
absolutely.
Them have contributed.
Can I take some dynamite and blow up your supercomputer?
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Yes,
okay.
Please.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I can do that.
Yeah. You add, well, and I wouldn't. I don't think you should put the.
He just meant rhetorically.
No, I know. Right. I don't want. Yes. No, but I don't think you should put the lineup together with the supercomputer. I think it works well
it
the
works
way they have
great.
It set up right now. Even if Luis Arraez is never going to walk, and he's never going to walk, and that's okay with
who
me.
Who cares that he doesn't walk?
Leading off.
Give me those knocks.
No one cares.
No, I don't think anyone cares.
And pressure-filled plate appearance, no matter what.
Yeah.
You are getting it. On probably average 6-7 pitches off of that starter to start the game.
Yep.
Like no quick out. And that's almost every time, unless he does happen to swing first pitch. Ambush,
which Jurickson can do as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Would be fine. And he was the leadoff hitter yesterday in the game. And it worked out just fine for,
and we've
for the
seen,
Padres.
And we've seen now how this becomes a perpetual motion machine. Because when you put Solano in the lineup every day, and all of a sudden now you've got two plus hitters in the 7-8-9. I still think a Cronenworth is a plus hitter. I know he's slumping right now. Then those guys are getting on base. Again, I'm talking about connectedness. Those guys are getting on base for Luis Arraez.
Yeah.
Luis Arraez is coming up with two outs and runners in scoring position, and we've already seen he's one of the 10 hitters in baseball that managers are scared to face in that situation. He's got to be in the top 10.
That's a great point.
So I love where he is. In fact, Tony convinced me beyond and above over the course of the summer. Like, it's not just the numbers.
Right.
It's the way he attacks pitchers, and then it becomes him just coming up over and over and over again.
It's like I said, it's a tone setter too, because it's not just him doing that. It goes down to Fernando, then it goes down to Profar. And by the time you've gone one time through this lineup, on most days, you already are in a hole. And getting through five is going to be tough at that point. And in the playoffs, pressure bust pipes. And if you can, once the pressure starts to add in the playoffs, which I think is a little bit different than the regular season, you start to see teams crack.
But where the Padres are really set up for their biggest innings is when the guys at the bottom of the order
100%.
Get on.
Amazing. 100%.
And we've seen it. And that's when they get the 4 or 5 run innings, which is why when they do, like they did yesterday, and we've talked about this probably 3 times this year, I don't want to see Jurickson Profar bunting them over.
Either.
I want to see him hitting.
I don't either,
and
Tony.
I will say, Tony, I have the wisdom to know that I should listen to Mike Schilt, who knows way more about
this, and Tony
to Jurickson Profar, and to Tony Gwynn Jr., and no matter what you all say,
don't have the wisdom.
I want Jurickson Profar
swinging
with his 23 home runs and his slugging percentage when there's nobody on and there's two guys on base. Mm. Don't bunt him over, Jurickson. Mm. Just swing away, man, especially in the third inning.
I know. I feel the same way. Just so you
Tony,
know, I feel the same.
What are we missing here?
I read both of your tweets.
I liked mine yesterday. Imagine a world where you just bunt, and you never
saw
it. You don't know how much power.
Did you laugh?
I laughed at it a little bit.
But
I wanted to, like,
come on.
I thought Herm Edwards was going off on my head.
Lockridge, bunt however much you want. I'm fine with that. Jurickson, you're too good. Stop bunting.
Was that same energy there when he was hitting 189?
It was. Yes. I mean, not
it
quite
was.
As much, but it
was.
He just had four
actually
hits.
Pretty
like,
much was.
Yeah. It definitely was, because
I don't waver.
You tweeted around that time, too.
I don't waver.
He just had four hits and a home run like 3 days
Tony,
ago.
It's called winning baseball.
Of course.
That's what it's called.
Okay, so again, I say it as a world-class bunter that had no confidence at the plate. I've said this before. I liked, first and second, nobody out. Oh, thank God. I'm not going to K. I'm not going to hit a double. I'm going to get one down. You know why? Because I like the pat on the butt. Attaboy, Woodsy. Attaboy. And you know what? I was a good hitter. But if my three-hole guy consistently, or one, whatever, you know, in yesterday's case, goes up there, bink, lays one down, I'm
okay,
scratching
so,
my
okay,
face.
Okay, so let's break this up.
All right.
First, it isn't consistently. Jerickson has over 80 RBIs on the season. So,
which is all the more reason to swing away.
It's not consistent. I think a little bit is kind of personal for you because of
my history.
In the history.
I want him to believe in himself as much as I believe in him.
Believe it or not, those pat on the backs were warranted. I mean, you put your team in a position to win. And it's not to mention who he has coming up behind him. Yeah. I mean, he's got probably the hottest Padre coming up behind him. And I'm willing to die with that.
All right, I think that's an argument against Bunting. Oh. Tatis can bring him in from anywhere, from first, second. He doesn't need them to be moved over. I don't want Tatis just trying to hit a ground ball or a fly ball. I want him hitting a double and a home run.
If Higgy gets on with a single to start the inning, then Arraez gets on with a single, and you got first and second. I don't want Fernando bunting. I don't want him bunting.
Fernando may not be bunting.
I don't want him.
No, Fernando will not be bunting.
Okay, I don't want him to.
So you're happy. But everybody's happy.
That's all. Jerickson made that call, yeah?
Of course.
100%.
Of course.
He said that one time after he bunted, he was like, did you see the rest of my I went 0-for-4. Let me bunt.
Y'all was mad about that one.
I was not mad at the 0-for-4.
He wasn't swinging the bat well. In this case, he's swinging the bat well, but you know what? He's thinking to himself, you know what? I'm going to give my teammate the better shot.
He's thinking Framber Valdez is a tough customer. It's going to be hard to score runs. Let's try to get one.
The point is, there are a bunch of different reasons why a guy chooses to do that. You don't think Jerickson wants to be the dude in that spot? Of course he does.
I get it.
He's thinking about winning. And when you have that mindset versus just going back to last year, and not to pick on him because he addressed it himself, which I love. When you have a mindset of protecting yourself or thinking about yourself, that festers across the way.
It does.
Right? Now, we're deep enough in the season. Jerickson's done this enough times where I'm sure guys would not have thought that.
Yes.
However, it's emblematic. It's evidence of how they conduct themselves as a unit.
How they're thinking.
And how they think.
Yep. Yeah.
And so in a vacuum, I understand what you're talking about, but this is a bigger picture deal for these guys.
You can always hit sand with me. I will never take it personally because I love you. I respect your knowledge.
Yeah, no, I know you wouldn't, but
I screamed. How I screamed at the TV yesterday.
But guys, he told you.
I know he did.
Told you. He said, I am Profar.
Yeah, I'm Profar.
If I put the bunt down, it's because it's the right play.
That's right.
And if I'm putting it down, it's going to work because I am Profar.
That's him telling you, let the professionals do the professional thing.
That's it. And you have one of your best hitters, one of your best players that's been on this team this year doing that, what Tony just mentioned. What does that look like to the rest of the lineup?
How about this? Because we bring this up on the flip side all the time, right? Why can't when we put a superstar in the box because he's unwilling to give up the me moment, right? We criticize those guys often. Here, Profar is who may not be the superstar of the team, but is having one of the best years on the season. Yet, as he said, I'm Profar. Know thyself.
But also know who's behind you. If Luis Arraez or Xander's coming up, and you know they got a real good chance for a single to drive in too, I think it's the right play. With Tatis or Manny coming up and so much power there, I feel like the right play is to just have three chances.
So you differentiate between Arraez and who was the other one you said?
Xander.
And Xander.
Yeah.
Versus
more singles than power.
Okay, but
versus the power guys that are coming up.
Let me throw one other thing into the soup here, all right? Because we talked about this yesterday. Guess which team leads baseball in ground ball double plays? The Padres lead all of Major League Baseball in ground ball double plays. Jerickson Profar has plenty of double plays. He eliminated the opportunity of a double play right there, which is the number one thing that kills San Diego Padres offensive rallies in 2024.
Every time.
All right. Well, I mean, by that logic, then, when we get to the playoffs and you're facing the Framber Valdezes of the world, are we playing for one run every single time in the third inning, fourth inning? I mean, I think in order to, we've got really good pitching, we had a really good bullpen. You're gonna have to throw some crooked innings up there, and boy, what a good lineup to do it. We've certainly done it a ton. We also have one of the best offenses in baseball as well, despite our leading the league in ground
balls.
That
is historically inaccurate. You don't play
defense
big game or big high run scoring games come playoff time.
But you want your best hitters. And I think Jerickson has been one of our best hitters. you want them trying to drive in runs, not yes. giving the best pitchers.
I love
an
that
extra
you
out.
Said in the third or fourth inning, yeah, which yeah. we did, which is not when we were talking about the previous bunt. That happened a little bit later on in the ball game, yeah. right? So when you're talking early, first half of the game, yes, yeah. of course, guys are. Jerickson Profar, my guess is third or fourth inning, Jerickson Profar is not laying down that same bunt. We get down into
in the playoffs,
yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. We get into deeper into the game. He's 100%.
And that's true.
He's 100%
with that too. I agree with it too.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, so 97.3, very friendly Padres roundtable presented by Roundtable Pizza.
Why don't we just do an hour
pizza.
On bunting?
By the way, we covered that whole subject last week. Yeah, we did.
Please don't.
Let's talk about the that team to the north. Padres currently 3.5 games behind the Dodgers. Got three still against L.A. Dodgers pitching is in shambles, riddled with injuries. Even Dodgers fans are starting to kind of give up some hope. However, the remaining schedule definitely favors the Dodgers outside of those three games. How realistic do you think, Annie, is a path to the division title with 9 games left in the season?
It's not out of the question for me. They're not mathematically out of it. I've seen, to me, a lot of things can change in a week. And while the Dodgers do have the Rockies and the Marlins, I mean, look, the Diamondbacks lost 2 games to the Rockies. The Dodgers did lose to the Marlins, earlier in the series. You just never know what's going to happen. And the Padres are just so locked in right now that if you do get a little of that weirdness happening, they've got a chance to just zoom right past. Is it a long shot? A little bit, yeah. I mean, like the numbers, the games are ticking down. It's a bit of a long shot. But I don't think it's impossible for them at all.
Craig, I think there is a path, but I think it requires the Padres either winning out or maybe only losing once and not to the Dodgers. And then I'm not saying they can't do that, but yeah. you cannot expect any help the rest of the way outside of yourself.
So we had a whole segment on this yesterday on Annie and Elston, and the number is 5%. It was yesterday. And then the Dodgers won a game, so it's less than that now today because another day is off the calendar. So there's somewhere around a 4% chance. You know, so if you run 100 scenarios of the last 10 games, 4 times the Dodgers either lose enough or we just sweep out, and that's how the Padres win the division. But there's two paths to the Padres winning the division. One is the Padres sweep out. And the other one is that the Dodgers just tank out and they lose a ton of games. And believe me, there's some LA fans who believe that's going to happen. I'll give their club enough respect to say, by the way, the last 4 games they've scored 8, 9, 8, and 8 runs. So they're going to slug their way into the division championship, barring us sweeping out. And can it happen? Sure. Do I plan on stuff like that? Of course not. It's a magic number of 6. It's 8?
8.
No, 5 to clinch a playoff, but I think it's 8 to clinch home field.
Yeah.
And that's the number I'm thinking about the rest of the way.
You know, we talked about it a little bit on our show, but if you go back in time, had the Dodgers not acquired Jack Flaherty, Tony, I mean, they would have almost nothing left. And the Tigers are probably going, why did we trade Jack Flaherty? They're a half game out of a playoff spot right now, even trading one of their 2 best pitchers. That turned out to be maybe saved the Dodgers' regular season. I don't know if we'll save them in the playoffs, but Flaherty, without him, I don't even know what they'd have left.
Yeah, they'd be in trouble for sure. They could very well be in trouble anyway, even with Jack and how well he's pitched. This is one of the rare situations where it seems like the injuries could be too much to overcome. I mean, it's not that they haven't had injuries in that organization. They've just always been able to find a way to overcome them with some aging bats in the kind of do everything role like a Chris Taylor. You know, those guys aren't playing well, and it really has kind of reverted. Plus, adding how Gavin Lux has played in the second half, it's still really the big three and him. You know, after that, that lineup is just not as deep as it used to be, and they don't have the starting pitching or the bullpen, for that matter, to kind of scramble over that.
Well, you can't always make baseball make sense, but I would think as a Padres fan, you'd like to see the inverse of 2020 when the Padres went into a playoff series against the Dodgers with no pitching left.
None.
And you kind of think, okay, right, now the shoe's on the other foot this time around. Hopefully the result will be exactly the same in reverse, that when those two teams, if they do end up meeting, the Dodgers just won't have the arms to match up with the Padres in a series.
Well,
like
and,
that.
And like we talked about today, I think, you know, when the clock strikes October and the first game of the playoffs is here, the Dodgers will probably have a bye, be able to get a little bit healthier. But for them, what killed them is the guys that they always are touting as the next great one, the next great one. And we all buy into it. We believe it. If you watch Bobby Miller's first start this season, you went, oh, my God, I can't believe they did it again. They did it again. They got another superstar ace who's controllable, young. They'll have him. They'll pay him. He's phenomenal. He went off the cliff. He's been terrible. Sent down yesterday. Michael Grove is hurt, who was another stud. Landon Knack's pretty good. But, again, you know, and Tony was talking about those role players, the aging guys. They still scare the crap out of me because everything turns to zero. Chris Taylor's 170, whatever average, zero. Just like Otani's, just like Mookie's. And all these guys are like, okay, the grind is over. Get a little breather, reset ourselves. So, yeah, man, anytime you have a lineup of Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, like I'm not letting Dodger fans off the hook if they go down. Injuries happen to everybody. You still have a ridiculous, ridiculous lineup full of...
As you said, they're about to still get a bye.
Yeah, get a bye.
They're good enough to do that.
That's exactly right. So they're still a team that you know, scares me, as does every single team that makes it in October.
You know, just one last little button on that, though, as I'm thinking through it. Even if the Padres don't win the division, and I do feel if the season was 3 weeks longer, which is something I know we all want.
at least Priscilla could be here for part of the last, so Ello could at least show up for a week.
But one thing that could happen is that Milwaukee could push past LA.
I was just thinking that. Yeah.
Dodgers could bump into the no-buy scenario, which could be a bye-bye scenario.
That would be toast. They may be toast then.
If I'm the Mets or the Diamondbacks, whoever ends up finishing the third wild card, I might almost rather see the Dodgers than the Brewers in that 3-6 wild card matchup. And then whoever gets that second bye, gets the winner of that series, is a pretty good spot to be. So yeah. Brewers and Dodgers have a lot to play for in that 2-3 slot. Even if the Padres don't catch the Dodgers, that's an interesting scenario here at the end of the National
League. Well, I think Craig nailed it, as the 8 is really the only number we should be thinking about right now, and that's home field advantage in the first round of the wild card. And Petco Park, you know, they'll jam 55,000 in there maybe, and let's get nuts, and 3 games at home, hopefully just 2. And I think that's what they need to focus on right now, certainly. Well, actually, focus on beating Garrett Crochet tomorrow, and that's
there
it.
There you go.
Seventh inning stretch time in our Padres 97.3 The Fan Roundtable, presented by Roundtable Pizza. A little break from the Padres discussion.
What about your favorite bunt of all time? How about that?
Today's
Everyone's
question,
no?
We will hit the autumnal equinox this week and summer giving way to fall. So I'd like everyone's opinion on the flavor combination known as pumpkin spice and what it should and should not be used on. Tony, are you a pumpkin spice person at all?
I am not a pumpkin spice guy. I
no lattes.
Pumpkin spice.
You detest it.
Yes.
I like normal pumpkin pie. I do not like pumpkin spice flavored anything. I'm a peppermint mocha, but I don't like pumpkin spice latte or pumpkin spice cereal or pumpkin spice bread.
If you go to Trader Joe's,
everything is pumpkin spice right now.
Pumpkin spice biscuits. I don't know.
Pumpkin spice spaghetti carbonara. They have everything pumpkin spice. It's
taking
insane.
Over.
Too much.
I like pumpkin spice cheese.
No, I'm joking.
I don't really. Yeah, beef jerky, pumpkin spice. No,
we're exists. I promise you.
We are a big fall family.
I know you are.
We are a huge fall family.
The Christmas decorations are going up probably within the next couple of weeks.
But we don't skip Halloween and we don't skip Thanksgiving and we are. There'll be a pumpkin spice candle that smells amazing, but
I like pumpkin spice candle.
Smells good.
I don't want it in my drink.
I don't want it in my food.
Nothing.
No. Yeah. I love pumpkin pie, though, man. I like
pumpkin pie. Is good.
Really good. I like Halloween.
Exactly.
I like all of it.
I love Halloween.
Halloween's the best. It's the best.
I do not like pumpkin spice anything other than pumpkin pie.
Right.
And I don't know why it started migrating into everything else.
I don't either.
And who called for this?
Like,
who asked for this?
Fume at this point. I mean, what's on your neck before you leave the house?
I don't need a pumpkin Oreo. You know?
No. Yeah, they have those.
I don't need any of them.
Well, pumpkin on its own is actually pretty hideous.
Well, yeah. So people first called everything pumpkin flavored. No, you don't want anything pumpkin flavored. That's a squash, and it doesn't taste good. All right, White Sox are coming to town. Given our general overall sense of worry as a fan base.
We can start with Craig on this one.
12.
What would be your advice to approach this series as a fan, Craig?
Oh, I like this question.
You know, obviously it's baseball. Things can go wrong. There's, you know, you can't always expect a sweep, yet you kind of expect a sweep. But what happens if it doesn't happen? How do you approach this last home series as a fan against the worst team in baseball?
Dread.
alcohol.
Yeah. Dread, anxiety.
That's not a fun way.
Pumpkin spice Xanax.
I mean, yeah, I'm considering, are there any pumpkin spice gummies? Like, what can we get to take care of this weekend? No,
I mean, look, I feel just the exact same way as when we play the crappy Rockies, which is when you win, it's like, okay, yeah, you're supposed to win.
Good for you.
And when you lose, it's like, oh, my God. That was a game you were supposed to win. Now, let me tell you, this last week has taken the pressure off this series.
Oh, yeah.
So, unless you think we're going to win the NL West when we have to win out, and that would be a way where I'd be literally panicking. Like, we've got to win all three of these games. But, honestly, we probably don't have to win all three of these games anymore to get where we want to get,
yep.
Which is the playoffs. So, you know, I would actually go out. I will be out as a fan on Friday to celebrate the team, and, you know, it's the last home weekend before we're paying playoff prices, and hopefully we've got those playoff games. So, you know, go out there and enjoy it.
Yeah, you say that. You don't have to necessarily win, and you probably don't. At the same time, the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks, you get two playoff teams the last week, and they will be battling. And those are going to be tough games, the last six. These are your last three to really make hay. Padres have done really well, Woods, the second half of the season against the lesser opponents.
Sure.
They had their troubles in the first half against the Rockies and a little bit in the second half, the Angels. But for the most part, they're 26-2. Craig, you have the number of the record against
27-6 in their last 35.
Against teams with sub-500 records. This should be a celebration. This should be a fun weekend, and we're all looking at it like, this can only be disastrous for the Padres.
It's baseball fans, man. That's how we are wired, essentially. And I do think, you know, I don't think you really change your perspective on it. To expect a sweep is a fool's errand, my friend. That is a fool's errand. Beating a team of 26 prideful men that want to keep their job, that get paid for a job, that want to get a job next year, and know that other teams are watching them potentially. Man, it just, to go in there and expect it, you would be, I don't think there's any way any of those players are like, whew, at least it's the White Sox coming in. At least they know better. They played 150 games. They know exactly what to expect. So I think you go out, you figure out a game plan on waiting out Garrett Crochet, who's their best player or pitcher, and figure out a way to not let Andrew Benintendi beat you and Yoan Moncada. And other than that, man, try to hit the ball hard, good hard 90s, and take the extra bag and do all the things that you've done all season long. And I think the chips at the end of the weekend, yeah, man, I think you win 2 out of 3, and I'm happy with that. If they win 2 out of 3, you can't lose this series.
And that's how the team needs to approach it. But, Annie, what about the fans? Like, what's the mindset going into this series for fans?
To me, the mindset is go to Petco Park or watch at home and enjoy the last regular season.
Hell yeah.
Homestand type feel that this team has given you this year. I agree. I think take the series personally.
Yeah.
I think that I read the story about that Jeff Passan wrote. He wrote a very long feature about the White Sox and how their clubhouse is actually more united than people might think.
Sure.
And how they're working hard really still. And I believe that. I don't know if they have it in them at this point. But I think you take them seriously. I think you try to win the series. I think Steven Wilson should probably find AJ Preller somewhere and give him a few choice words. But other than that, I think fans should probably just enjoy it, and the players should just, you know, keep continuing to play the way that they have up to this point.
So, Tony, we agree. We're all pushing back on anyone that says the sky is falling if they lose one of these three.
Yeah, no, okay, I think so. I think my advice to fans is trust your team at this point. If this ain't enough games to trust your team,
yeah,
trust
right.
your manager, nothing's going to save you at this point. So I agree. And if you're also expecting a sweep, you're setting yourself up for failure. So, you know, win the series, continue to do what they've been doing.
Tony, as long as you played, you know, and being a part of some really, really good teams, and when you play those down teams, what do you see in them? I mean, can you look across sometimes and go, oh, yeah, they're done. They gave up. They're done.
For sure.
And then you look across and you go, oh,
Oh, they're trying to spoil.
They're trying to do something.
Yeah. That energy is apparent immediately when the game starts. But I think for the Padres, I think the really good thing about this ball club is once it turns to the second half, like, there has just been kind of this mindset that I don't even know that they see the jersey, you know, when they're out there.
Yeah.
It's just about them executing, playing the game, doing what the scoreboard's telling them to do. And that's why they've been successful.
Just one last little bit more serious note, which is that, you know, as again, these are paid professionals that also have gone through this dog day of summer of being so horribly bad. But now they see the finish line, too, and they see an ability to not be the worst team in history.
Yeah.
And I do truly believe that's a motivator. I look at that awful 2003 Tigers team. They won four of their last five to finish at 119 losses and not be the Mets. So the Mets have held that since 62. White Sox won some games this week.
They did.
They're going to come in trying. I really believe they're playing the hardest that they've played all year right now to try and avoid history.
Yeah, they lost 20 straight series and before winning the last one. So they're definitely not trying to be history.
All right, in honor of the White Sox coming to town, for our last question, and for the four of us, it's more the worst team you've ever covered or been a fan of. But for Tony, it's what was the worst team you were ever on and why? Why was it so bad?
Probably.
Yeah.
It's either the 09 Pods, but we finished with the best record in the second half. So
right.
I would say the 14 Phillies.
Okay.
I was on.
And what made them just not good?
We were older, and not a lot of guys liked each other.
What about the fans? How bad were the fans?
You know,
then?
Phil,
they're always bad.
They were crushing us, and we deserved to be crushed. We weren't very good. We still had all of the guys that won World Series there, but they were older. There was just not a good mix of we got not a good chemistry team at all. And
yeah.
So it got out the gate all right, and then it just gradually got worse.
Annie, doesn't even have to be baseball. You've covered football
teams.
Yeah,
you knew
where
I was going.
Yeah.
Covering the Chargers during the relocation years, during the years where they were half in San Diego and half finding a new home somewhere else, and how just torturous that was for fans and for players and the questions, and it was a cloud that loomed over those seasons. You can never get away from it.
Now, Woods, you've always kind of, you're a Yankees fan growing up, Notre Dame, kind of front runner. What's the first team you ever were a fan of?
I mean,
yeah, you.
You know, when your dad abandons you when you're a child and your mom remarries when you're 10, and you've never had a father to throw the ball with or teach you how to hit, didn't really know anything about sports, you thought your grandfather was your dad. Now, you can't relate. You were off to Del Mar in the Rolls Royce, riding on the Lakers plane.
Court seat at the Lakers
game.
Yeah,
riding on the Lakers plane, speaking of front runners.
Some of us didn't live that life.
No one, a lot of us had it a little bit difficult. Eating canned salmon, you know, for dinner at your grandparents' house.
Second Street in Oklahoma.
Sardines and crackers.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. If my dad had been a fan of the Reds, I would have been a Red fan. If he was a fan of the Brewers, I would have been a Brewer fan. So whatever he liked, I liked just immediately. And I remember he gets me really into baseball, and I'd never swung a bat. I'd never thrown a ball until I was 10. Got such a late start. So I'll do I'll just talk about my first year of playing baseball. I was on a team called the Cobras.
Oh.
And we had the old pirate round hats.
Oh, yeah.
My very first little
classic
team.
Pillbox hat.
Round hat.
That's awesome.
With a cobra on it. And I remember I did not foul off a pitch. I didn't touch a ball with the bat, which is why I learned how to bunt. For the whole first season. And it's amazing I ever went back and did it again.
That's,
but I loved it, and I kept practicing and kept
awesome.
Playing. But that was by far the worst team I've ever seen or been a part of, and it was mostly my fault.
Well, I brought up the 2003 Tigers that lost 119 games. They swept the 2003 Padres.
Oh, my God.
At Qualcomm
you can
Stadium.
For both of us. We
and
had
that was our answer show. Is the 2003 Padres.
I missed one day for the birth of my son and did the other 161 of that god-awful season when they were supposed to be in Petco Park already.
Yeah.
And it got delayed, so they just said, you know what? we just won't care about the team for a couple of years until we get into Petco.
We'll pick it back up then.
So bad. Tony, your dad had already retired.
Yeah, he was gone at that point.
We are in the absolute interregnum between what we were and what we're going to be, and it's just like, we got to put out a roster, so
tough.
Here it is.
As far as coming through
the barbershop quartet.
But Benny, what was wasn't last year, didn't last year almost kill us?
Oh, that's true.
Because the expectations were so high.
Too many good players.
Yeah, too many good players.
Yeah, at least they got to watch good players.
That's exactly right. Yeah, they watched some good players.
At least Juan Soto had 35 home runs.
That's true. Gene Kinsale.
Oh, yeah. Brandon Villafurdy.
Sorry,
come on.
Yes.
Yeah. That's right.
All right, well, that is the end of the penultimate edition of our regular season Padres Roundtable, brought to you by Roundtable Pizza. It is pizza royalty. When we come back next week, we'll be down to the last three games of the year and looking forward to the postseason, hopefully. Thank you to Tony Gwynn Jr., Annie Heilbrun, Stephen Woods, Craig Elston, Annie and Elston are coming up next. Don't go anywhere on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.